Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Brian Billick is with us. Coach, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Sure thing. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Coach, I find this impossible to believe, but maybe you won't. I don't know. The Browns are number one in the NFL in takeaways. Number one with 20 takeaways, three more than anybody else, and five more than anybody else except for one team. They are number one in turnover differential by three over everybody else, and yet they have only won two of seven games. Does that seem impossible to you?
Well, no, it's a tough one. You know, turnover differential and an explosion differential, those are plays of 20 yards or more.
Yeah.
Those are for a long time been the two major determinants for success. And, of course, Greg Williams, that's what he hangs his defense on when he went to the Super Bowl with the Saints. They were all about turnovers. They didn't care about red zone efficiency, third down efficiency, total yards. It was just get turnovers, put Drew Brees and that offense on a short field. So that mentality is great, and it's great to get those turnovers, but you got to be able to do something with the turnovers as well. So, yeah, that kind of goes opposite the norm to lead the league in turnover and not have more wins to go show for it.
How do you coach turnovers, Coach?
You know what? It's an interesting question. You know, a couple different approaches, obviously. You know, a lot of it, you just let it come to you. And defensive guys say it's not turnovers, it's takeaways. You know, we take the ball away.
Sure.
You can certainly be aggressive and try to force the quarterback to get the ball out early. You can also be passive, do some change-up zones, trap him into making throws where he's not clear what he's seeing. Obviously, in terms of the tackling and everything that you're doing to try to get the ball out, we see it all the time in the NFL. Players, obviously, you know, even to the point where it's a detriment, are trying to rip the ball out rather than try to tackle a guy.
Coach, the Browns are amongst the worst in the league in terms of penalties. Is there any connection, like when a team is penalized often, is the coach to blame at all for that?
Well, you know, I don't know if he's to blame, but he's going to be held responsible. You know, coaches get held responsible for everything. You know, the tough ones are it's the pre- and post-snap penalties that drive you nuts. During the course of a play, holding, pass interference, okay, you're constantly coaching that. Seems to be a moving target sometimes based on some teams and the way they view the officials calling it. But it's the pre- and post-snap, the jumping off sides, too many men on the field, the late hit, those types of things. That drives you nuts because that's just mental discipline, and that's got to be important to the players. It's got to be a priority, and I'm sure coaches are doing everything during the course of practice to stress the fact that we can't shoot ourselves in the foot this way. When you have the turnover that you're getting defensively, of course, it's the turnover differential that's the key, not just takeaways.
Yep.
What's the giveaway? It's that turnover differential that makes the big difference. And penalties, those are things that you can control.
We're talking with longtime coach, now analyst, Brian Billick. Brian, you know, it was interesting this week after the game, Coach Hugh Jackson started to talk about the offense and how he needs to be more involved with the offense as Todd Haley's been the play caller and the offensive coordinator here. And it's created quite the stir here in Cleveland this week between the media and the coach. And he kind of backtracked it a little bit yesterday. He said I want to help. If you're Todd Haley, how do you feel about this?
Well, you got to take it at face value. Sure, I'll take all the help I can get. Whatever observations you want to have, you know, Todd Haley's a longtime coach, longtime coordinator, head coach in this league. So, you know, he knows what he's doing. Certainly the eclectic approach of all the coaches, particularly from the head coach, who's an offensive guy, any observations. It's hard to imagine that hasn't been going on to this point, that there's observations. I've worked for head coaches when I was the coordinator that are going to chip in and have observations, and it can be very certainly helpful given their perspective of what's going on. So, but obviously when you're losing, the frustration gets very high and a lot of people will overreact to the observation that a head coach, head coach is going to be involved with every aspect of the game. And if one side of the ball, offense, defense, special teams, is having a particular problem, I can imagine he's going to insert himself in all of those situations.
Yeah, we get that, Coach. It just it felt like the comments were a little bit of throwing Todd Haley under the bus, especially when he's done that to the former GM a few times. He's thrown players under the bus, and you know that's how we took it, and a lot of fans took it.
Well, it's understandable, you know, and you can't control how people interpret what he says. And if he came back and tried to say, no, this is what I meant, and he's not taking the play calling back,
yeah.
You know, I think you got to take him at his word.
All right, we're talking with Brian Billick, head coach, former head coach, now with the NFL Network. Coach, what do you think of the way of how Baker Mayfield has played so far?
Well, you know, I do all my radio shows on Tuesday, and a lot of people are asking that question. Well, what do we think of this rookie class of quarterbacks? And I think Baker Mayfield, like the other three that are starting, I think we're getting what we thought we'd get. I think we're getting what we saw in college across the board. Baker Mayfield, he is a gunslinger. He's going to throw it up. He's going to make things happen. But in the NFL, having that mentality also leads to turnovers. So I think we're kind of getting what we thought we were going to get with Baker Mayfield. Sam Darnold, is when he's good, he's very, very good. When he's bad, he's very, very bad. Josh Allen obviously is hurt. His completion percentage, like in college, is an issue. Josh Rosen's just getting into it. He's not surrounded by a very good team. And again, he now has an offensive coordinator. This guy's been through, you know, a couple dozen of them in his career, both in college and in the pro game. So I think we're getting what we thought we were going to get. I will say this. I think all of them look like – I don't think the game's too big for them, and they're going to continue to evolve. They're all on teams that aren't very good right now, and that's a factor as well.
We're talking with former NFL coach Brian Billick, now with the NFL Network. Coach, when you see, you know, the game is more offensive than it's ever been. We have, I think, six or seven quarterbacks on pace for 5,000 yards. We've only had 9 5,000-yard seasons in the history of football, and there's six or seven guys on pace there. Is how do teams adjust? If you're like a defensive-minded head coach, do you have to adjust your thinking to some degree?
To a degree, the game has changed. We've talked about it before,
yeah.
Where in the day it used to be 60% base and 40% nickel, and then it went to 40% nickel and 60% base. And now a lot of coordinators will tell me they'll be in base less than 20-25% of the time. So the game has changed a little bit. And how we look at defenses and how they rank has to be adjusted a little. What makes a great defense? Because I don't know that the numbers in today's game and the way they're slanted toward the offense – are ever going to match up with the great defenses of the past. So I think you have to change your perspective on that a little bit. You know, and obviously with the protection on the quarterback, naturally it's going to change. So that's not to say that they're not performing at an elite level, and it's great to see. It's obviously what the league wants. But realistically, you do have to look that it is a bit of a different environment than it was even when I was coaching 10 years ago.
Coach, is it a loser mentality to complain about the officiating?
No, because a lot of teams or a lot of people do it.
Yeah.
It is an excuse because the officiating is what it is on both sides.
Yeah.
You can't lean on that, certainly. You can try to address it with your team, but the officials at the end of the day usually get it pretty much right. Not perfect. And I'm the last one to justify an official. I got $75,000 in fines. You know, going after the officials. And that's real money. They take that money, by the way.
That's real money.
Don't anybody mistakenly think they don't. But they're going to get it right for the most part. And at the end of the day, it balances out. But like the great Chuck Knox used to say, the calls are going to balance out if you can last long enough.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, the reason I ask is because, you know, the coach here has complained a lot about the officiating. And the Browns have they've had some calls that have went against them early in the season that, you know, we're game deciding calls, frankly, and now lately a lot of the players have kind of jumped on that too and saying that the Browns aren't getting any calls, you know. And I don't love it.
And that's the thing, you've got to be careful that if you start to open that door, you're basically giving your players an excuse to build on it as well.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing, because then it just diffuses the responsibility as well. And you get into a point, well, what does it matter if I work hard? What does it matter if we play hard? Because the official is going to take it away from us anyway. So it's not a good place to be.
Do you feel like the officiating is worse than it's been, or no?
I don't think so. I mean, we always hear about it, and then certain time of year, there's some calls made, and everybody feels like, and then we go through, well, should they be full-time officials, and we should have another official on the field, and should we do this with the replay or the other? I think on whole, by year's end, it'll probably be what it has always been. It's a tough job. The game gets faster and more wide open. They're trying to do their best to bring the rules down to as specific as possible so that there's as little interpretation as possible. But at the end of the game, it's a day. It's a very fast-moving game, and it's a tough job for these officials. And you know, I think they're doing as good a job as can be done.
Hey, I don't know if you watched the whole game last night, the Monday Night Football game, but the hot thing today is questioning the two-point conversion attempt by sure. Pat Shurmur when they're down 14 points in the fourth quarter. And you know, my first thought was, why are they doing that? And now that I thought about it some more, I'm actually kind of okay with it. What was your philosophy in those situations?
Well, you know, there's first off, there is a thought process, and whether it's Pat Shurmur and what he did in New York, whether it's Vrabel in Tennessee. I mean, there's three or four calls you saw in the Ravens and Saints game. The fourth down, you know, going for fourth down a lot early in the game with the mentality, look, we need to, anytime we get in the scoring position, we gotta try to maximize that. And you make those determinations, and there's sound reason behind it. Now, if they don't work, then you're the village idiot, right? It's just, we always look at it through the prism of, did it work, did it not work? If I'm Pat Shurmur, look, I'm 1-5. I mean, do I really want to put the ball back in the hand of Matt Ryan? I'm going to try to take a shot. And if it doesn't work, okay, it doesn't. You kind of pay your money, you take your chances. But certainly when you're on a 1-5 team, sometimes you got to do something that says, I'm going to go outside the box here a little bit because the other thing, the conventional thinking, is not working for us.
Coach, when Le'Veon Bell does come back to the Steelers, which is going to, you know, it has to happen, I think, by week 10, maybe 11. So in the next couple of weeks, he's going to come back. They seem to be riding the ship the way they've played the last couple of weeks and will probably be a serious playoff contender by the time he gets back. What do you do? Like, Connor's played well, but we know that Le'Veon Bell's as good as any back in the league. Do you go to a timeshare? Do you make Bell, even though you're angry with him as a staff, you know how talented he is? What do you do in that situation?
No, once he comes back, you put him in. Now, you put him on a pitch count early to see, you know, you got to get him into the game. And unfortunately, you have a guy like Connor to go to. But at the end of the day, Le'Veon Bell, the best back in the league. And when he gets up to snuff, when he gets up to playing weight, so to speak, then got you play him. I mean, and add that to that offense, that can be a difference maker. And to have Connor in your back pocket to kind of rotate in and keep Le'Veon fresh and do those type of things, that's a huge asset. But you don't keep a player of that caliber on the bench.
Coach, Jared Goff, Deshaun Watson, we'll forget the rookies this year because they got to prove more. But Goff, Watson, Wentz, Mahomes, even though he's kind of a rookie too, but he did play at the end last year and he was there. Of these young guys, they're all really good. Which guy would you take over all of them?
Oh, boy. You know, that's Mahomes looks brilliant.
He's doing is just
absolutely spectacular. But Carson Wentz, he's playing as good his first five games this year better than he did last year in his first five games. Goff, obviously, really in a rhythm with a very good football team. You know, I hope fans can appreciate we're at a phenomenal time for quarterback play. We have a handful of Hall of Famers, guys that are dead, you know, whether it's Brady or Brees or Rodgers or even Roethlisberger. And we have, when those guys eventually choose to kind of step in, you know, step off the field, we've got a good core of young quarterbacks to step into that void. It's a good time for quarterback play in the NFL.
Do you think the league or the people that vote for the Hall of Fame, are we going to have to change how we look at quarterbacks? Because some of these quarterbacks that are really good but probably not Hall of Famers are going to end up putting up Hall of Fame stats based like you look at the stats of quarterbacks from the 60s and 70s to now, like – those guys' stats they wouldn't even be starters anymore based on those stats. The numbers are crazy. How are we going to look at that in terms of the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, you're going to have to adjust it within the landscape of the rules
and
what the other players are doing during that era. Because you're right. I mean, the completion percentage, the big plays, everything about it has changed to a degree. And I think those that make these decisions certainly look at that. You're always looking at a player within the body of the time that they played. I heard a guy on the radio, it was great the other day. Cleveland fans will appreciate that. He was talking about the great Jim Brown. They go, well, how many yards do you think Jim Brown would get in today's NFL? And the guy responded, he said, oh, I think he'd get 60, 70, maybe 75 yards. He goes, Jim Brown, the greatest running back of all time, would only get 75 yards if he played in today's NFL? And the guy said, yeah, Jim Brown's 75 years old. how well do you think he's going to run at 75 years old? So I thought that was a great response. You know, so it's always tough to compare players from one era to the next.
Coach, I know you're working with SeatGeek. I love SeatGeek. I use it myself. What's going on with SeatGeek right now?
Yeah, got to use it, obviously, with all that's going on in sports. And it's not just sports. It's theater tickets. It's concert tickets. You get the SeatGeek app. You go in, that thing that I love is you go in and it tells you what kind of deal you're getting. I remember the great Art Rooney said, I don't mind overplaying for a good player. I just don't want to overpay for a bad player. You know, I don't mind overpaying for a good ticket. I just don't want to overpay for a bad ticket. You get the SeatGeek app. Every transaction is guaranteed, and you put in promo code Billick, and you can get $20 back on your first purchase.
Coach, we appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us.
Sounds
Coach.
Good.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.